last two, I need to get on that.
Yeah, same. I just
There's a
have
couple that I
one.
was like not excited to watch, so I watched other things instead of that. But I
Oh,
still have time, so
really?
I'm okay. I'm okay. Yeah, I went to see Mean Girls in theaters on Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
My favorite song was so good.
I'm
Renee
gonna have
Rapp
to.
is so great.
I have to definitely watch only Oscar things until March, because like I still haven't seen Hunger Games. I still haven't seen Mean
Same.
Girls. I haven't seen whatever else is in theaters. I'm really behind on TV shows. I really want to watch Mr. and Mrs. Smith. I need to catch up on so many things. So right now it's just all Oscars, and then I will get there eventually. But right now it's just like I'm busy.
Crunch time.
I'm busy. And that commute is a lot. So like, if I didn't have the
Yeah.
long commute, I would have time to maybe watch more things. But I only have like relatively 3, 4 hours at night to do what I gotta do. That's not a lot of time. So it's hard, but it's fine. I'll get through it. It's fine. It'll be great.
It'll be good. You can do it. We still got a couple weeks left.
Right.
Speaking of a couple weeks, I'm fucking late, but I finally got my plane ticket.
Oh, that's okay.
So I will be there all day Friday. And I
Okay.
leave like four, the flight is at 4 on Monday. But
Cool.
Crystal, do you know if you're going to be off Monday or you're going to take a half day or what's going to happen? You're going to call in sick?
I'm definitely gonna call in sick to one of those days because
So let's not put this on
I don't.
the
We can edit this out. I don't. I because it takes 1,000 years to accrue anything. I don't have a lot. So, because I'm just trying to accumulate sick time to go to the doctor. Like I just don't have time to go.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it's really hard. So, anyways, that's real life problems. Anyways. So, hey friends. Welcome back to another episode of We Have Thoughts, a podcast about movies. I'm Crystal.
I'm Joy.
And I'm Anna.
And we're here to discuss the current 2024 Oscar nominees for Best Picture and our conversations with Oscar series. Today's film is Anatomy of a Fall, starring Sandra Hüller, Swan Arlow, and Milo Machado Grenier. Written by Justine Triet and Arthur Havari, directed by Justine Triet. The film is about a woman who is suspected of murder after her husband's death, and their visually challenged son faces a moral dilemma as the main witness. Along with Best Picture, it's nominated for Best Director, Justine Triet, Best Actress, Sandra Hüller, Best Original Screenplay, Justine Triet and Arthur Havari, and Best Editing, Lorraine Senechal. With 5 nominations total, this is Anatomy of a Fall. What's up, kids? What do we think of this movie?
I fucking loved this movie. I had a great time. I thought it was very smart. I loved watching a different country's court system. I loved the use of 50 Cent. I loved that dog. I loved that dog. I want that dog to be happy for the rest of its life. It deserves it. It won the Palm Dog.
Mm-hmm.
Deservedly so. It deserves all of the pets and good boys and belly rubs. Yeah, I really dug this movie.
Joy?
Joy? I didn't like it.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I thought it lagged. I thought it was fine. There were some good scenes that I really enjoyed. I do love that PIMP is going to be stuck in my head for the rest of the week. But I, like, I don't, it just, it wasn't, why was this, it just, I don't have words. I just wasn't, I wasn't engaged. I wasn't interested. I wasn't entertained. And I tried to really focus. And because, like, since it has subtitles, I'm like, okay, let me, you know, I got to pay extra close attention so they can get everything. And, you know, even with subtitles, tone and diction and, like, you know, body language and everything says everything else. So, like, you don't just need language. But I was like, okay. To me, in the Best Picture lineup, is very replaceable. Crystal?
I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. I felt so... It was riveting to me. It's amazing how you could have made something so small as a simple story of a domestic dispute and a murder mystery. I love a good murder mystery, by the way. And make it riveting. I think what was so smart is to... They didn't tell us who it was, who the actual killer was. Mm-hmm. You kind of lose it up for interpretation. Kind of makes you think if you have your own thoughts. And then for a lot of it, we're kind of with Daniel, the son, kind of like what he's thinking and what he's going through. And I think having her son be visually impaired is a very interesting narrative wrinkle. So that's really smart. I like that part of it. Sandra Hüller is phenomenal, I think. I think mm-hmm. she was able to do such a really good job of conveying all these emotions, but, like, still staying stoic because that's who she is. She's not this, like, crazy crier and not a, like, overly emotional person. And so because of that, as we all know, that can be interpreted as she's cold and she's mean and she's not this and she's not that. So to have that be what we see of her, still upset, you know, because things change. She went on trial and she got arrested and she's still feeling these emotions, but at the same time she's such a strong person inside. And so to see that was really great. I like the setting. Oh my god, their house on a hill. Like, again, I'm from Flatland, so when I see mountains I can't can you imagine living there?
No, seeing that every morning,
gorgeous.
Oh my god, it's the French Alps,
right? French Alps, yeah.
Oh my god,
beautiful chalet.
Also the interesting narrative thing of the fact that the husband and wife speak different languages, but English is their, like, their thread. Middle ground, there you go. And those scenes are really great because they know English, but it's not their familiar tongue, so they're having these arguments in another language, so they're trying their best to convey what they feel and what they want to say, but they're not the most comfortable with how they're saying it. So there's a lot of tension there. So they're saying things, but their body's also doing a little bit more to convey, like, how upset they are. And I thought that was really smart. I did not feel the 2, 3, 4 hours, whatever it was. I did not feel it at all.
Neither.
I love a good, foreign films, y'all. They be it. But yeah. I'd say, yeah.
I like that. I also really enjoyed the fact that, you know, the husband, who we never really see him until the big fight. We get glimpses of him, but he is such an important central character, but we don't really get to see him talk or see how he feels about things until that big scene. And that scene, I could watch it over and over and over again. I think it is so well written. It's so well directed. I loved it. I loved everything about that scene.
You know, that scene is actually, like, I think to me, the highlight, the, like, high point of the film. That scene reminded me a lot of, and we go back to it all the time, but in Revolutionary Road, when Kate Winslet and Leonardo DiCaprio are, like, acting at each other, that's really what that felt like. And I think that the best part of the movie overall, where it's its strongest, is in the screenplay and the writing, because both of the characters, Sandra Hüller's character, who you see all of, and she's very well fleshed out, and she's very dynamic and interesting. And even the husband, who you don't really get to know his like inner life until that scene, they're both written so well. And I think that scene was just like the culmination, the pinnacle of the film. But I feel like other parts of the film didn't live up to that scene to me. It felt like, I don't know, I'm not going to say that it didn't completely feel cohesive. It felt almost like kind of out of, like separate from it, which I understand because it's like that's the evidence that they're bringing into the trial or whatever. But it just felt so different from the rest of the story and not in a way that's like, I don't know, holding it all together.
I really enjoyed the scene or the way it's shot where Daniel is testifying and the camera is just all on him, just in different angles. So you don't see the reaction mm-hmm. of necessarily the crowd or the judge or even Sandra herself, but just you see his eyes and he's trying to focus and kind of get a feel for the room. And I thought that was really well done. Yeah, I would agree. The directing is probably the best part. I mean, the writing too. It's just, man, I just really like a well-made film is like fantastic.
Well, what stuck out to me about Daniel in court, and maybe this is a French thing, but when he was testifying, there wasn't an audience. There was nobody in the sitting behind him, which I loved. I loved that. I love that instinct to protect the child. Because obviously, in America, that is not our number one. We pretend it is. It is not our number one priority. But yeah, that was also a note I have is the camera work on Daniel in court was superb. I loved the French court. I love the fact that she's sitting there and they can just turn to her and ask her like, oh, can you clarify this? Or, that was so mind boggling to me. Like as someone who watches a lot of like crime TV and, like Crystal said, I love a murder mystery and, so watch a lot of court portrayed on TV, and so to see another country's trial, murder trial, I thought was so fascinating. I loved the costumes. I loved, although I will say, what did I say? Maybe I didn't write it down. No, I did. The red robes, that red with the like the black. That shiny black, like satiny kind of fabric against that vibrant red.
Mm-hmm.
It felt very like evil to me. And it felt, but it also reminded me a lot of like cardinals in Rome. Mm-hmm. So I had like a weird tie. Like that's where my mind went. Not that I think that prosecutor was evil or anything, just that the robe itself and the colors, the fabrics next to each other, I was like, this is giving off like evil character vibes, but mm-hmm. I was very into it. I loved all of it.
Maybe that's what they wanted to portray, you know, in the direction and the costuming, but like he was fantastic.
So good.
He was eating her up. Like, when someone is, because I can't speak ever. So when someone is really great with words and they're quick and they're smart, I'm like, yes, it's like, I love it. I also love how like they were just kind of speaking out of turn. They were just talk like,
yeah.
She interrupts. I think Sandra like interrupts the prosecutor at one point. Like they just it seemed very casual actually. Very interesting. Yeah, I didn't think I would like seeing another country's court system as much as I did. I don't typically like courtroom dramas too much. Like, what was it when we saw the trial of Chicago 7? I didn't really care for that.
Mm. Oh yeah, yeah.
But maybe just because this was different. Maybe that's why. Maybe it was mm-hmm. just that the difference of it was interesting to me.
I will say I do not feel like that judge was impartial. there was so many times where I was like, I feel like this judge already has it out for her and it already feels against her.
I'm sure that happens in the US courts as well.
Sure. I was just that was just my feeling for this particular judge. I was like, she doesn't like her. Yeah, I was very fascinated by all that. And I will agree with TikTok and Twitter. That is one sexy French.
Oh my God.
Oh wait, are people like thirsty over him or something?
Yes.
Oh, there are so many thirst edits about that man.
Of course they are.
I agree. Give me more.
That's not even what I was saying about man. Also, let me just watch this movie. It's you know, it probably was. It's probably his tousled hair. That's probably what.
Yeah,
it was.
For sure. It's sexy as hell.
Okay. It's a natural French bedhead.
Oh my God.
It was fine.
I honestly was not even thinking about that. I was more focused on the drama of it all. And this poor child's having to do it. Also, the actor who played him, Milo Machado Grenier, wow. What a performance he was giving. We talk a lot about how child actors need to be recognized and amongst their peers. Several episodes we've talked about it. But, like, I just think he was doing some great work. And he's not even, like, visually impaired in real life. He's just, like, a good actor. Like, not just for a child, but for, like, in general. Good job, Milo. Phenomenal. What else is there to say? Also, sorry, before you continue, was the dog acting? Because that was also fantastic.
I feel like the dog was acting.
I was like, this is given the horse from
War Horse.
I was like, what? I was on my bed and I like, was he pretending? Was he acting? Oh my God. I don't know, dogs what, can that's... do that. Me.
That split second when I thought that dog was gonna die, I about turned the movie off. I was like, you can't do this to me. I cannot do this right now. How dare you do this to me?
When that scene popped up, I was like, oh no, Anna's gonna lose it. Cause I also thought the dog was like gonna actually die. And I was like, Anna's gonna turn off the movie. That's my first thought.
But black and white fluffy dog, that is my dog.
When it was happening, I kept thinking, but why? Why is he trying to kill him? I was so confused. And then when he explained, I was like, oh, okay. I was like, because then I thought, well, then if he kills the dog, did he kill his dad? Like, I was trying to, like, figure out the...
You're trying to big brain it.
Yeah. And I was like, what's the reason? Why? He's not a cruel boy. Or maybe he is. Ah! It was a lot. In that moment, it was a lot happening.
Would have been a very fun twist if it turned out the boy had did it all along.
I thought about that. But
I did too.
But I was like, I don't think so, because he found him.
Right.
And it doesn't really make sense because the lady interviewer saw him leave the house. So
yeah. So talking about little boy, Daniel, do you guys believe his final story in court about his dad's conversation in the car?
I think a little bit maybe. But I think he was also realizing that, like, if he helps to convict his mother, then he'll lose her too. So maybe he was, it's maybe yes and no. Maybe he like exaggerated the last story to make sure that, you know, his mom doesn't leave. But I don't know. That's question. So many questions.
Yeah, because it's interesting. I haven't watched a crime show in a long time, but I don't think in the US they'll like, if a child or like a family member is testifying against another family member, would they, at least here in the US, would they let them be like within sight of each other or just be like, don't look at them, or like they go out of the room or something? I don't watch enough of those shows to know, but Anna, maybe?
The defendant would always be in the room. They could direct the child. They couldn't speak to each other in court.
Outside of court,
I mean, there are cases where they have I forget what it's called here, but they do have a thing very similarly where they would have someone come be the third party go-between. Depending on the case and depending on, safety of the child or whatever.
True.
They could still be together. But yeah, someone would have to be around to make sure that nothing's
like a guardian being or whatever.
Coerced. Yeah. A guardian ad litem? LITEM, maybe? I've read a lot of books. Jodi Picoult books. They'll teach you a lot.
So I think what's really interesting about this movie and the fact that it's even nominated for Best Picture is that Justine Triet is fighting, the director is fighting with like the French government. I don't exactly know why, I forgot. But she's fighting with them, and a friend of someone who is in the French government is on the board who picks a submission for an international feature for the Oscar. And so it's not proven, obviously, but there's like a rumor, petty rumor that they didn't pick it because she's fighting with the government and they don't want that representing their country. So then it's hilarious that she's nominated for Best Picture and Best Director and Best Writer. Yeah, not international feature. Because they're like, we're not
gonna, interesting.
You're not going to get it. So on just on that alone, I'm like, I kind of wanted to win for that. That's kind of amazing. You tell the government, girl. Go off. Tell them.
Love it.
Right? I should have looked up why she was mad at them, but I don't really. Do you really need a reason to be mad at your government?
No, we have a million.
I believe, daily. I believe it.
As soon as I wake up.
I don't doubt it.
So who wants to move to France? It looks cute.
I don't speak French, but sure.
I mean, how hard could it be?
Girl, I can barely speak English. And also,
you
I'm
know what?
Mexican descent. I don't speak that either.
You know what? Maybe another language will be easier than you for England than English.
You think so?
Maybe for you too.
I'm bilingual. I'm bad at two languages.
Look, I think it depends where you move. If you move to a more metropolitan area, you're going to find English speakers. But if you move to, like, the countryside, you should probably have your shit together a little bit more.
Yeah.
Or be willing to get your shit together, because...
I don't know. I feel like a little bit in a sense of entitlement if I go to a country and not know the language and expect to like live there and be fine. Like, I don't know. I feel like maybe because I like being prepared. The idea of that is like,
yeah, because that's a little bit has a little bit of roots in colonization, so maybe we don't want to do that.
That's what I mean.
But at least learn the basics, you know, before we go there.
If you go there with the idea of wanting to learn and open to learn and not like you should be understanding me, right? I should be understanding you.
That's true.
Then I think there's a big difference. I think people will be more willing to be like, oh, let me help you. Then no, go fuck yourself.
I guess in a mind, like I said, I don't like being unprepared. So I would feel the need to learn like the basic things, like just basic, you know, I don't know, but that's just me. I like being prepared. So in this movie, there's a lack of score. And I think that's a really, because the score sometimes can help the audience feel like a certain way about a character if they play a certain theme when a character shows up, or a lack of theme or something. And so I like that the lack of score helps like maintain the mystery of the storytelling. Like, you're not really sure. It also makes it feel real, because like I love music, but it's not playing all the time, only in my head. So I liked that aspect of it. And starting it off with a steel drum cover of a PIMP is hilarious. And I was like, oh, okay, so this is movies for me, because it's 50 Cent, and then the dog is named Snoop. That's fantastic. Fantastic. Also, it reminds me of, I've always said, I'm not going to get one, but if I had got a rabbit, I'd name it Hip Hop. Or, shut like, up. On Degrassi, they had a ferret, and they called it Bueller, and I thought that was funny, too. So this dog as Snoop is in the same vein as that. I think that's really funny.
You know, for not having a score, though, I do feel like every time that piano, it was like emphasizing, oh, something's happening, or oh, someone did something, or be suspicious of this. I felt like that was pretty, at least to me, the way I was watching it, that was like pretty like obvious cues of like, ooh, a thing is happening. Although the whatever he was playing, I don't know what that piece is called, the one that he played over and over. It said it in the subtitles, but I can't remember what it was. That piece is really beautiful. And it immediately feels like menacing and sinister and like overall bad vibes.
Yeah, I agree. I loved now I'm having a hard time remembering exactly. I have written down that flashback while focused on Daniel.
Not the one in the car.
No, it was before. It was before the fight. Oh, maybe it was. It was when it was just audio at first, and it's zooming in on Daniel hearing it for the first time. I think that's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was intense. But digging into that fight and what they were fighting about, I was fully on her side, except for her taking his work. That felt a little icky. Even if he said, sure, whatever. I still don't think that's right. But her calling him out, like, you are wanting something traditional, and I'm like, that is on you. I never said I wanted that. I never said, like, this is my time and I'm using it wisely. Like, I can't tell you what to do with yours, and it's not my fault that you're not doing it. I was like, snaps, queen. I loved how, like Crystal said, she was not a wallowy, crying woman having a fight with her husband. She was strong. She was standing up for what she was saying. And she, like, I want to watch it over again. I loved that. I loved that.
That, I think, is, like, they're so good at the back and forth that actually for me, I was like, I feel like, okay, like, I get what he said, and then I get what she said, but then he said something, okay, that makes sense, but then she said something, okay, well, that's better. So in the end, I was just like, oh my god, they're just so, like, when we talked about Marriage Story, and how they were both, like, at each other, whatever, boo, this is, like, this one scene is a better version of that, I'll give you that.
100%. Hondo P.
Because the characters are much more, again, much more fleshed out, much more, you know, three-dimensional. Their reasonings are more, like, clear, even though, like Crystal said earlier, they're not speaking their native language, and they're still able to get these certain points across, you know, mostly to each other. It felt like the rest of the film, where it's very ambiguous as to, like, did she do it? Did she not do it? Does she really have cause to do it? Or, you know, is this just, everyone's just, like, screwing with her and trying to, like, trash her life, even though she didn't do anything. I think that scene was really charged, and I could see it going either way. Even at the end, I was like, this feels like a very equally, like, not that I have many experience in marriage, again, as we've said before, but, like, it feels just like two people with two completely different communication styles, different, like, emotional styles, trying to make something work without communicating until the end. Like, clearly, if you, this reminds me of Succession. If Shiv wanted an open marriage, she should have said that from the beginning. If Tom wanted this one thing, and he wanted, you know, his ambitions and whatever, then he should have said that. Same thing in this. If Sandra Hüller wanted to, you know, live her life, but also share it with him, and he wanted to share it in a different way, you guys should have talked about that before. One, you got married. Two, you had a child. Three, you moved to the fucking isolated French Alps. And it all, like, marriage problems, marriage stories fall into this category. You didn't communicate. And you have not communicated until it blew up in your face.
I mean, yeah, that's, communication is the key for all relationships, to be fair. You know, you gotta say what you need and say what you want forever, for it to be, you know, a good give and take. for it to be a good give and take, you know, because she felt like she was trapped and they moved to his home country so he could feel okay, because he still felt bad about causing the accident in the first place with their son. And she was just kind of like agreeable, like, okay, fine, I can write from wherever, it's not a big deal. And I just think like that scene is so great, because we see them argue, but then we don't see them like physically fighting, we just hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is much more effective than mm-hmm. actually seeing the fight. And when she says, like, you know, I'm not that girl you married, I'm whatever, it reminded me of Gone Girl. Where she's like, I'm not that I'm not who you think, that's not me. You married me, not that. Like,
mm-hmm.
yeah, and it's the whole idea of like, you marry someone maybe you're really young and you think like, oh, okay. It's because they don't grow together, they grow apart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's again, we don't know anything about marriage. But I mean, yeah, communication is the key for sure.
I feel like they started out their marriage being okay with making sacrifices. Like, oh, yeah, I can make that sacrifice because this is for us. And then he kept sacrificing and she's telling him, no, you don't have to. But he's like, no, I will. And then when he became so small, she was like, I told you not to do it. I told you not to make all these sacrifices. I told you not to compromise. And now I'm getting blamed for it. And now I'm the one who's, you know, getting yelled at because of what you wanted to do. I told you not to do it. I told you. And I moved here. That was my sacrifice for you. I'm not happy. I don't want to be here, but I'm doing it for us. I don't know. I think.
Yeah, I think you always have to people, be. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think people think that making these small sacrifices won't mean much until they've added up. And you're like, where am I? Where did I go?
Right. You always have to be wary of. You have to be wary of people who want to be pitied for the mess they create, you know? Like, he, at this entire time, like you said, it was, like, sacrifice, sacrifice, and then, like, oh, it's your fault. Well, no, homie, it's you, like Anna said. Mm. Like, you always got to be careful. And this is, like, again, not just some marriage advice, like, life advice. Especially at, like, work. If someone at work is creating all these messes and then wants to be pitied for it or wants to put blame on someone else, that's a problem. That's not great. Yeah, so I mean, okay, so I guess the question of the movie, do you think she did it? No one.
I look like you were gonna say something.
I was going to unmute myself. I don't think she did. I think they had that fight. And afterwards, he made that decision. I don't know if he knew he was going to do it that morning. I don't know if he woke up and was like, today's the day. I think he woke up, he started working, and he saw that his son had left, that his wife was in bed, and he was like, okay, now's a good time. Here's this opportunity. And he took it. That's my thought. I don't think it was like some premeditated thing on either side. If we're saying she did do it, I don't think it was premeditated. I think it was they argued and something happened. But I really do not think she did it. That's my take.
Joy, what do you think?
I think the film works for me better if I don't have like a. If I stay just as like undecided as the movie is without the not telling me, I could see it really going either way. I don't necessarily think that she did it, because like being in the courtroom and being presented all the evidence, I'm just like, you'd have to push him like really far back and like hit him just like this, and he'd have to fall just like that. And so that to me, like rationally, doesn't make sense. But and she seems kind of a more rational person. She doesn't necessarily like act on heavy emotions, because I mean, they keep saying it, you know, she's kind of like cold and like, you know, focused on her thing, and she doesn't think about it in the way that he does. I don't know 100% either way, but to me it seems a little bit less likely. I'm like 60-40, like 60% she didn't do it, 40% she did.
I think that while I think she didn't do it, I honestly think it doesn't really matter, because like kind of like you said, the movie kind of works best when we don't know for sure, because it's her and her son, and they're gonna get through it. And yeah, he lost his dad and she lost her husband, but you know, maybe because I mean, yeah, this is Anatomy of a Fall, but also Anatomy of a Fall of a Marriage as well, you know, because this is their they clearly should have been maybe separated before that, or well, I think because she had said like that he knew that she was sleeping with other people. Did I miss that part? Yeah.
Yeah, he knew.
So, I mean, it was, not that that's wrong. Like if you're cool with it, both parties are fine with it, that's fine. But because he was probably so emotionally like not in his head, just in general, feeling maybe a little bit, some animosity towards the fact that, like you said, Anna, she took a story and she's, you know, the successful, and he's just like at home being a stay-at-home dad, and he just can't hack that. I think the marriage was gone for a while. Like you said, Anna, I think it may just kind of happened, or maybe he was thinking about it and then slipped. Who knows? But I don't think anything was premeditated for sure.
I think they were separated and always, but official. You know, they weren't even sleeping in the same bed together. he slept in his office, and they had very separate lives, and they just came together for Daniel. And I think essentially they would have divorced if they didn't want to keep it together, except for Daniel, which people just get the divorce. Just do it.
Girl, don't I know it.
You think it's better for the sake of your child? It's really not.
No, it's not.
It's worse.
Yeah, it's actually worse.
It's always a hot mess. But yeah, I think... Oh man, I had something to say other than they were separated. Anyway, that's... I think they were... To reiterate, just married, and they only came together... Or Daniel. Other than that, they were completely separate people at that point.
Also, that green couch on the office, ugh. At the very end, that's what she's laying on. I was like, I want to nap there. That sounds... Can you imagine napping on that green couch with the snow-capped mountains outside?
Ugh. Gorgeous.
Oh my god. I want it.
I do think she loved him.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I do think she loved him and appreciated him for what he did do for Daniel. Otherwise, her going to sleep and lay down in his office at the end of the film would have been very, like, weird. Mm-hmm. But I think her going in there was like, she misses him.
Yeah.
Those are my thoughts.
I also love the opening credits of, like, their pictures of them, like I guess in their courtship or whatever. We need more opening credits just in general. I really like that.
Yeah, they don't do opening credits in a lot of stuff anymore, do they? No, it's like not, theme song anymore. No score, no like names and lights and whatever, you know. let's bring that back to the theaters.
Well, except for Mission Impossible, where they give you the entire movie and the opening credits.
Oh fuck yeah, but I love those. Those Which are really, good.
You're not
those
going there for the so story good. Anyway. You're going there for the action. So it's
for fun. The action. To see Tom Cruise do impossible, literally impossible things.
Yeah, I mean, because the story is very, very simple. I don't really have too many notes. So, yeah.
Do y'all have same.
Okay. I mean, do you wanna go through categories?
We can do that.
Best picture. What do you think?
Sorry. I agree. I loved this. I would watch a million movies like this and be completely happy if they were all nominated. So I'm in.
I would agree. I think it should be here. I have a feeling Joy does not.
I don't know. I think there's a couple other movies that could have been in here instead. Bye. If we have to keep it in here, fine. Fine. Like what? I'm sorry?
Like what movies would you replace it with?
What did I just watch? May, December is the one that comes to mind. If I'm really reaching for the fucking stars, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse would be another.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I'm putting a list together of my, like, who I would have been nominees on my thing, since I'm watching. Instead of the goal of watching so many of the ones that actually got nominated, I'm going to watch all the snubs. So I've been watching a bunch of other stuff instead, or stuff that got left out.
Like what? What are you watching?
I clearly don't remember shit. Okay. Because I had it and then I lost it and now I can't remember. So
okay.
TBD.
Okay.
Put a pin in it.
What about Best Director for Justine Triet? She's up against Martin Scorsese for Killers of the Flower Moon, Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer, Yorgos Lanthimos for Poor Things, and Jonathan Glazer for The Zone of Interest.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
I hate that there's only one woman there, but I'm glad it's her. I think
she
knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's because Academy can't nominate two women because they don't know how to do that. I think their voting system is only has like one button that says women on it. So otherwise it'll break. Like
once it would have broken the system. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So for the mere fact that the government hates her and she's there. I kind of love that too. Her being there. I love that.
I really wish it would have been. I could have gone with like two other female directors and been much, much happier. But
well, yes.
She's still.
I want them there too.
I'll give her that. She did a good job. Sure.
Who else? What other directors?
Celine Song and Greta
Gerwig. And okay. What did you say?
Celine Song.
Absolutely. 100%. Celine Song. We'll get there. But Celine Song.
Okay. What about Best Actress for Sandra Hüller? She's nominated against Annette Bening for Naiad, Lily Gladstone for Killers of the Flower Moon, Carey Mulligan for Maestro, and Emma Stone for Poor Things.
Yes.
Yeah, so far, yeah. I'd give it a yes. I feel like there's a lot of stuff that was happening in that category. So I've got to watch more stuff before I make a concrete decision, but I'll put her in there for now.
I think she's going to win, but I love that she's there. And the fact that she's in two, which we'll get to, she's in two nominated movies. That's baller status, y'all. And I liked her enough that, like, if I see her name in a movie, I would consider watching it. Because she did a lot of face acting that I enjoyed. But yeah, so congrats to Sandra Hüller. Then we have Best Original Screenplay. It's up against The Holdovers, Maestro, May, December, and Past Lives.
It is a good screenplay. I would put it in there. Yes.
Yeah.
Then it's original. We love it. We love original.
Yeah.
It might be my choice for original screenplay.
I'm going to wait to see Past Lives because I haven't seen it yet. But of the ones we've talked about, I mean, Maestro, no. The Holdovers. Well, the thing is like, The Holdovers is also really simple. But I think the execution of Anatomy of a Fall was, again, a lot of smart narrative choices were being made. And I really appreciate that. So, congrats to that. And then the next one is Best Editing, I believe.
Yeah.
The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things.
I'll say yes. I like it here. I think there was some really great editing choices. Again, this is a category I don't feel confident in, like, making decisions on. But there were moments here that I can call out that I liked, so I'll say yes.
Right on. Yeah, sure. I agree.
Sure.
Are there any places do you feel like it should have been nominated and it wasn't?
No, I really think it got the ones it deserved.
The only thing I would add would be supporting actors for Milo Machado, Grenier, because I thought he was fantastic. And they never really give kids their due when acting comes around, and I think they should. I'm still to this day mad that Jacob Tremblay didn't get nominated for Best Actor. He was phenomenal in that movie. Or James. Even the boy from Jojo Rabbit.
Oh,
I forgot his name. Roman.
Or Alan Kim. Or Kevonjane Wallace.
Well, Kevonjane Wallace, she got nominated.
So oh, wait, she did it. I mean, one, sorry.
But nominating kids should not be like a weird thing. It's just, they're actors. They're doing a good job. I would put, especially, there's people I would take out of supporting actor and put in place Charles Melton and Milo Machado Cornier.
Supporting actor is a stacked, could have been stacked.
Yeah.
We could have had banger after banger after banger, but instead we have what we have. But we'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to them. Especially because I've seen some now that I'm like, interesting. Mm-hmm. But yeah, let's do our rankings then, shall we?
All righty. Crystal, you go first since you're so good at being prepared.
Okay, not really. I'm going to go with number 4. We have Killers of the Flower Moon. Number 3 is Maestro.
5 movies.
I'm sorry, what did I say?
4.
Oh, my bad. Okay. So number 5 is Killers of the Flower Moon. 4 is Maestro. 3, The Holdovers. 2, Barbie. And 1, Anatomy of a Fall.
Dang.
Ours Shake are almost identical. Except I have Maestro at the bottom and then Killers, followed by Holdovers, Barbie, and then Anatomy at the top.
I mean, dang.
Okay, mine looks nothing like that. Number 5, I have Anatomy of a Fall.
Dang. Well, that's okay, because you liked Killers and we didn't, so.
That's fine. Number 4 is Maestro, just because those juicy, juicy visuals. 3 is Killers. 2 is Barbie, and I think I'm keeping The Holdovers at number 1 right now.
Nice.
Wild. I love
what
it.
What a wild year we're having. I like it.
I didn't think you were going to hate it, but I didn't think you were going to like it either.
I mean, I don't hate it, but I'm just like not... I don't think I'm seeing what everyone else is seeing.
Yeah, that's how I felt about Killers of Flower Moon. I was like, I don't get this.
Which, again, totally fair opinion. That's totally fine. I'm making it a point to watch as much as I can, so that I can be like really solid in my reasons, not just because I assume that it's going to be good from somebody else, but because it actually is good from somebody else. Even as messy as Maestro was, I can't find it in myself to put it on top of that. I just
can't. Wow, dang.
And it's not even
like... You like Bradley Cooper that much, huh?
No, I was about to say, it's not the Bradley Cooper of it all, because literally, if you're just listening, listen to our last episode, it's not the Bradley Cooper of it all. It's the cinematographer. It's actually the Matthew Libatique of it all, because as a cinematographer, wow. Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah, he's the only reason that movie really works, to be honest with you.
Yeah. And I mean, and at least the vignettes that they picked were nice, but like overall it was just a mess. But I feel like that one was meatier than this. I don't know, even with that one like really, really great scene, marriage scene, Revolutionary Road scene in the middle, I'm still like not... That's not enough to save the whole thing for me.
That's how you're feeling right now. Uneasy in your seat is how it's about Killers. I was like, oh, I don't want to talk about this because I hate it.
Yeah, no. And again, I don't hate it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I didn't hate Killers. whatever. This isn't an episode.
Right. Like, this is, go listen to our, the season episodes. This has, like, there's merit to it. I do see reasons why. They're just not, like, I wouldn't pick those reasons for this. You know,
go ahead.
No, I'm done.
Going forward, I am eager to see what we think of other films. So I can't wait to talk to y'all about this.
Oh, bitch, I'm so excited. I love when we don't know. I love when we keep our ratings and our things hidden on Letterboxd and don't put it until later.
Oh, mine's already up there, but yes.
Yeah, oh. I don't hide anything.
Well, not you, Anna, but Crystal. Crystal, she doesn't put hers up there sometimes.
I don't. Because I need a movie to marinate a little bit in my brain. And even then, like, I initially rated Holdovers. I initially rated the Holdovers less, and I really not really sure why. I think I have this really weird thing where, like, if someone tells me something's really good, I just, like, automatically don't like it, which is stupid. I hate that I do that. But I kept hearing good things about the Holdovers, and I was like, oh, I don't like it. Just because everyone told me to like it, I'm not going to like it. That's dumb. That's really dumb.
That's so you.
I fucking hate that. So my first viewing, I was like, okay, 4 stars. But then when I watched it again, I was like, no, this is, like, really good. Like, it's a 5-star movie. What are you talking about? So my rewatch, I upped the score. Because I was like, girl, get over yourself. That's what happened.
I am very stingy with my 5-star.
Yeah, I don't give them to everybody.
If I like a movie well enough, a 3-star is good and a 4-star is great. If it's 2, then you must have really fucked something up.
I think I have Vice, like, 1.5-star.
I also don't rate everything because sometimes I don't know. And then if I go back, I'll very rarely go back and remember to do it. So if I do it right off the bat, I must have really felt something. Are there some that true. I really just don't know?
Yeah, I think because to me, how a movie makes me feel and, like, the technical achievement of it are kind of the same. Like, Barbie, to me, made me feel really great. So it's going to be 5 stars. Whereas The Holdovers was technically really great. So that's also 5 stars. So it's like
either or.
Yeah. But also, I watch a lot of, like, stupid action movies, too. So, like, those are, like, I don't even rate those because why? What's the point?
I don't rate them. I'll just give them their little 3 stars.
I loved Barbie and Holdovers. I didn't rate them 5 stars. Those are 4 for me.
Yeah, well, you just said that you don't give them out, so.
Yeah, it takes. You're stingy with those stars. I don't know what that 5th star elusiveness is. I'm also
Wait,
that
let's
way
look at your
books.
Letterboxd to see. What?
I'm also that way with books. Like, I only had, like, 4 or 5 5-star reads last year out of almost 80 books.
Damn. Okay.
I also read a lot of shit, but
I think the only movie that I immediately gave 5 stars after watching it was Parasite. That might have been the only one that I was at the theater. I was like, oh yeah, 5. Done.
That does say something.
See, I accidentally rated one movie 5 stars. I didn't mean to do that. That was an
Which
accident.
One?
Lord of the Rings: Two Towers has 5 stars.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that sounds right for you.
I fell asleep in that.
Toy Story 3.
Yeah, Toy Story 3 is pretty perfect, too.
Past Lives got 4.5, but we'll talk about that later. Oh, well, and then sometimes there's the fun 5-star, like Dungeons and Dragons got 5 stars because, like,
I think it did for me too.
Because how unexpected was that?
Also, I try to think, like, what was bad about bringing non-fans and fans together? Nothing. 5 stars. Mm-hmm. Like, Anna's a fan of D&D and I am not. Well, I would say I'm not a fan. I'm just not into it, I guess I should say. I don't know the lore and I didn't feel confused. I think if you're able to create a film that can be enjoyed by a wide spectrum of people, that is fantastic.
Where's that best picture nom?
Girl, that's my, yeah, that's my best picture. Well,
there you
yeah.
go. That's it. That's one of the snubs.
Yeah.
You gotta watch it now.
Snubs back, yes. What?
It's really good.
You gotta watch it now.
You'll like it.
Me?
Yeah, you're watching the snubs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'll watch it again. It was great.
Oh, you seen it already? Yeah.
Yeah, I watched it. I watched it after we talked about it whatever episode we were recording. It was so cute. So cute. Great movie. Great action in it too.
Girl.
The story was like fun, but also like, ooh, emotional. It had everything.
There are scary parts like the, like Chris Pine's face melting is going to haunt my dreams forever.
Chris Pine, come haunt my dreams. That's fine. That's cool.
Cool with melting that. Face? Right, babe.
You want anytime.
Doors open. Unlocked.
His beauty melts my face.
Okay, I think we're good. I think we can wrap that up. Thanks for listening, guys. Check us out later.
And the next episode. What's next? Oh, I gotta go back to the list.
Yeah, Oppenheimer. Thanks for have a good week. Make sure to drink lots of water.
Stay hydrated.
Mm-hmm.
Careful with the weather. She's being wacky.
She's always wacky.
That's true.
Okay, bye.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.